to Who, Corner to Corner podcast. In one corner, it's Jeff, and in the other corner, it's Paul. And tonight, they're fighting over Kill the Moon.
Yeah! That's amazing, because that is exactly the kind of introduction that I was thinking of the other day.
Oh, is it really?
We should definitely do that, because it just lends itself. You know, we are the Corner to Corner podcast,
yep.
So it makes perfect sense that we should be in opposite corners for this one, my friend.
Yeah.
Yes, so indeed.
Let's explain for anyone who doesn't know. So the context. So we put out, Paul and I discussed a little while ago what topics could there be for different podcast episodes, and one of
racking
them was,
our brains we were.
Yeah.
Brainstorming and then some.
We got a whole spreadsheet of stuff.
Yeah,
and one of them was what episodes do we individually like that the other perhaps doesn't. And I suggested Kill the Moon and Sleep No More from series 8 and 9 of Peter Capaldi's era, respectively. Two episodes that I like very much, and Paul doesn't. And we put a vote out to see what would be the winner for what people thought we should reassess. And for a while,
we couldn't do both of them. We only wanted to do one. It's no point putting anybody through that torture.
And for a while, it looked like Sleep No More was winning, Kill the Moon has taken the top spot. I just want to see if I can quickly check the... Yes, we had about 130 votes, and that was quite close, actually. Kill the Moon was on 55.5.
Yeah. Surprisingly not many votes, though, really, is it? It's less than half of what we had for our darlings.
Not very popular. What episode should we rewatch? Dalek, Rosa, Mummy on the Orient Express, and Spearhead from Space, to see whether they were still as good as
remembered.
And the fandom thinks. Huge number of votes for that. So maybe the lower votes on this says something about people's perceptions of these two episodes.
Yeah.
So, Paul, we should explain our views on them, on Kill the Moon, but I'll go first. So
I thought you might.
I've always defended this episode.
Good for you, mate.
Thanks. Because I felt that it was a great episode that was thrilling and had some really great dramatic stuff between Clara and 12. It didn't bother me that the moon was an egg, or if any of the science in it is cobblers. And you know, I kind of, personally, I feel we're watching a show about a police box that travels through time and space, and an alien looks like a human with two hearts and can regenerate. I have suspended my disbelief as much as I possibly can. So things like this, it doesn't annoy me, basically. And for the sake of a really good story, I can kind of get past stuff like that, you know, anyway. I always felt that this episode was a bit like Orphan 55, for example, unfairly maligned, and possibly, you like Orphan 55, don't you?
I do like Orphan 55, yeah.
But one of those episodes that sort of has this perception the fandom that it's crap.
Well, within part of the fandom.
Within parts, yes, that's
true. We're talking minorities, really, aren't we? Let's be honest.
There is love for Orphan 55 out there, which is great. This one was always one I always really enjoyed it, and felt that it had an unfair hate on it, purely in a lot of instances, because the moon's an egg. And I thought, why is that a reason to overlook, you know, great thrills and scares and drama? So that was my take on it.
Fair enough, mate. Yeah. It's interesting, because I think what we're doing here is kind of echoing the sort of conversations that go on across all kinds of fandoms. You've seen it in Marvel fandoms, DC, Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, anything really, where there's a real kind of division between people's feelings on a certain story.
Yeah.
And we are really opposite. Because listening to what you've just said there, I can't agree with any of that at all, my friend. And I hope we don't fall out over this. I'm sure we won't. It is unusual, I know. But so my position on this right now, okay, I'm going to go back to when I first saw this and my initial feelings. They have changed slightly. So I've watched this three times now. Crikey. So, but the first time I thought, I don't, do you know, at the end of it, I thought, what the hell have I just sat through now? Because I was kind of stunned in a way that my favourite programme had just dished me up a pile of sick, frankly. That's literally how I felt. And that's a completely, you know, that's the emotional response, if you like. You know, and I thought, well, okay, I didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy it at all. In fact, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I hate this story. And I'm saying words like, this story is rubbish. You know, the writer can't write. This isn't Doctor Who. You know, all those kind of things that come flooding through. And then, you know, then the rational part of my head kicked in and started analysing it. And thought, okay, so that's your emotional response out the way with. Why didn't you like it? Okay, so the first part is, yes, you can't get around it. The big elephant in the room, or the space chicken in the sky, however you want to look at it, the moon being an egg, the science, all that stuff, right? Now, Doctor Who has always had a very frivolous, flirtatious relationship with real proper science. It doesn't really ever get it right. But most of the times, it doesn't try to. Right, it invents its own thing, something that has its own internal logic, and runs with it. And it's a fantasy show more than a sci-fi show, really. So, you know, okay, so I can, but it does for me personally get right in a way of enjoying a good story. There's The Impossible Planet is another one. It's a story I actually still really like. But the one thing that always annoys me every single time I watch it is when the 10th Doctor quite confidently says it's impossible to have a planet orbiting a black hole. Okay, we don't know everything about black holes, right? But from what we do know, the theory says you can actually have a planet orbiting a black hole, right? A black hole is just the centre of gravity. Okay, it's a very chaotic centre of gravity, but you can still orbit around it if you find a stable orbit, okay? Blah, blah, blah. That's a different story,
see,
right?
See, so I think, I don't care. So scary Satan.
The science stuff in this does get in the way, because one of the reasons I enjoy science fiction so much is on the one hand, yes, there is a fantastical kind of future science which is complete gobbledygook. And in a lot of fantasy shows, there's a magic which is equal gobbledygook, right? And it's fine, because that gobbledygook has a logic within itself. It kind of works, right? There is, okay, you said the thing about the whole police box thing, right? Yes, we are watching a show that follows, you know, in which the main character travels inside a box that is bigger on the inside. It's like a magic wardrobe, basically, that can go anywhere in time and space and all that. But we kind of accept that, you know, and over the years, the science around it is kind of built up into its own mythology, and it's all fantastical, and it's slightly magical, and that's all right, that's fine. But as soon as you start knocking around with known science, inverted commas, because who knows, the moon could still turn out to be an egg,
could
and
be, yeah.
Unicellular life forms that are giant bacteria the size of giant spiders, and all kinds of other stuff. You think it's too much in the way of the story for me personally. That's the thing, right? One line, you know, it's impossible to have a planet orbiting a black hole. One line can stop me enjoying it, but I can get past it, right? I can move on. But when you constantly throw this stuff in front of me, it just throws me further and further away from the story. So that takes me on to the other bit, right? Which is the story. It's awful, in my opinion. I absolutely don't think that the story behind Killer the Moon, take the science out of it. Say, let's say that doesn't matter. We'll shove all that off the edge of the desk. Look at the story itself. I think it's awful. I honestly do. I think it is potentially one of the, for me anyway, one of the most horrific stories that Doctor Who has ever presented us, ever. And I'm talking, you know, my least liked story in Doctor Who, I think, is still Time and the Rani. I just can't get on with it at all. But Kill the Moon, for me, is not that far behind it at all. I think it does have some saving graces, which we'll come on to. But there you go, my friends. That is my position. And having watched it now for the third time, I'm sad to say my opinion on it hasn't changed at all.
Hasn't it?
I think it's still awful. So I'm going to hand it back to you now, and let's have some more positive stuff now, because that's all negative, and I don't enjoy negative talk. I'm a very optimistic person with an office surrounded in life affirmations. So let's go back to Jeff's positive persuasion.
I've never sort of really been bothered about, and maybe this is right or wrong of me, and I don't really care which people think, but I've never really been bothered about, realism to an extent. You know, the show has a fantasy element to it, and it is science fiction, and I suppose, the moon being an egg, it just doesn't bother me. I suppose I get so kind of absorbed into it all, I haven't gone into it looking for this to be, you know, real. It's a bit like, so I said to my uncle, he might be listening to this, I recommended the podcast to him recently. He's a
Did you? Well done. Hi, Jeff's uncle.
Hi, Tony, if you're listening. He writes books, actually, that are on Amazon and other places. Tony Harmsworth, science fiction author.
Oh, you got that little plug in there, didn't you? Well done, mate.
And I said to him a little while ago, and in fact this will bring up painful memories for you here, but I said, you should watch Alita, Battle Angel. And he said, oh, well, you know why? And I said, it was, you know, about cyborg and future and blah, blah, blah. A great film. And Paul still hasn't watched it. He's afraid of the greatness. And my uncle watched the trailer and he said, I can't watch this. I said, why not? And he said, well, look at the way she's leaping across the rooftops in one bit. Unrealistic physics. And I said, well, she's a robot from thousands of years in the future. And it, you know, he couldn't get past the unrealistic part of it. But then I remember a few years ago, he surprised me. He said he watched Avatar, and I was like, oh yeah, what did you think? He thought it was absolutely
wait for
incredible.
It now, yeah.
He thought it was,
he loved
brilliant.
It.
You know, yeah, the fact that it was completely rooted in, you know, a believable kind of ecosystem and biology and, you know, all of that.
Right.
And in fact, on a side note, I'm reading Cameron's art book at the moment, yeah. Technoir it's called, which is fascinating. All of his design drawings from his early days. I mean, you know, he saved huge amounts of stuff. But he was talking about the design of various creatures in Avatar and how it was based upon, you know, things on Earth and what it could be like in this different environment, and how they designed the teeth to move out, and, you know, it's not possible, perhaps, but, you know.
But there's a logic to it, right?
There's
that's
a logic,
the kind of thing
and
I like.
Thing.
So you think, how is the thing going to work, right? Okay, so it does this. Why does it do that? And what's the advantages of it behaving in that way? You know, and then what sort of problems does that create, and how do those things, you know, do they affect the story or not? You know, are they just backdrop? Is it part of the plot or whatever?
You know,
I like that kind of thing.
The horse creatures had, you know, their kind of lungs on the body, basically, you know, the opening rather than, you know, coming through the mouth as well, you know, and things like this, and the reasoning behind it. And in some ways, this kind of, you know, is slightly contradictory to what I just said about not really caring about the believability of things. But I like the fact that, you know, he's researched it like that, but I'm still like, yeah, that banshee, that looks awesome. I don't care whether, you know, you've thought about how well it would fly like that. Do you know what I mean? Going back to Kill the Moon. So, yeah, this is probably the first time I've watched it in probably a few years now, I think. And I'm pleased to say that overall, my view has not changed, but there are some things that, I'm older and wiser, wisened, that have changed slightly on it. I still
have you come away from your love of this story?
No, because I still think at its core, it's a really great kind of adventure piece. In fact, I just looked on Wikipedia. God. Where was it? Hang on, let me just find this. So there's a bit here about the writing of it. There, it says that, I didn't know this, but the episode was originally written for the 11th Doctor.
I had read that. Maybe I've seen the Wikipedia.
Yeah, I didn't know that, or maybe I had read it somewhere and forgot. But whilst briefing Harness on how to write the script, Moffat told him to, quote, Hinchcliffe the shit out of it for the first half, meaning essentially to make it frightening. Harness said that the episode would see a large change for the show, and I still don't know how people would take it. I'm in this kind of limbo now, waiting for people to see it, and I've no idea really how it will go down, which I thought was quite interesting, because I guess, you know, I guess they were aware of the, well, they would have been aware of the sort of fantastical element of it. You know, it opens obviously with Clara, and she's got this message for Earth, and so you immediately kind of set up with, oh, you know, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And then we jump back and things. So I didn't see the point of Courtney, if I'm honest. And I've seen people talk about her online since and how she was a bit of a pointless character.
I thought she was the best thing in it.
Did you really? How interesting.
Yeah, I think the thing about Courtney, what she did is she kind of shook up the dynamic a little.
Yeah.
You know, cause we've had the Doctor and Clara in various different kind of relationship poses. Danny Pink comes in at the start of this series, doesn't he, and throws that in, and then we have Courtney. I don't think she's necessary really to the story. I think she does get in the way, but I think having her there at least gives it some kind of extra dimension that I can kind of latch onto.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could have been they could have kept Courtney to have appeared in more than just The Caretaker, which is also an episode I really enjoy.
Yeah, I don't mind The Caretaker, actually.
It was good fun.
It's not too bad.
But she's only in The Caretaker and this that I remember, and then doesn't appear again. And, you know, In the Forest of the Night would have been a perfect episode to have had her come back in.
Yeah, I agree.
I, remembering all of that, I was a bit like, yeah, why is she here? You know, she was a little bit kind of all over the place, and some moments is quite clever, sometimes she's really dumb.
I agree.
And a bit too, you know, kind of youthy.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's that kind of the voice of youth as written by someone a lot older.
Yeah,
in a way, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's like me when I try to be cool with the kids. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
You know, I don't speak that language. I don't understand it. You know, they do. And I think who's the actress playing her? I think she does really well. To be honest, she brings a kind of reality to the character, even though the character
Ellis
is kind
George.
Of. I think she's really good.
Yeah,
to be
she
honest.
Was good.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's we could do without her, but I kind of like her.
She wasn't brought back, and B, she could have been another character and still achieved that same sort of goal. Maybe someone who was already there, or you know, could have been Danny. I don't know. Anyway, so she kind of didn't work for me, you know, for a number of things. I felt actually, in retrospect, that 12 was certainly in the first half of this. He's a little bit all over, and it's almost like they haven't quite worked him out, and you know, I've seen people say this you know, sometimes about series 8, that you know the Doctor was all over the place in his characterization, and I hadn't really thought of that before. I always felt that he had a really solid arc throughout the whole thing, but this one being initially written for 11 now might sort of explain some of that. But you know, he basically abandons Clara to make her own decision about it, because it's not his problem, as he's not from Earth, which kind of goes back to what he does in Deep Breath, where he just leaves her, you know, in the dungeon of the mechanical, you know.
I think it's a different reason, though.
It is. He's challenging her and feels that she's capable of making the decision, but it was I was a bit like, I'm still not quite sure about that, because I don't think that the Doctor would do that. And I didn't think that Courtney really worked overall, partly because I suppose I would have liked her to have been present more throughout the series. I think she, you know, she, like you said, did give an interesting dynamic, and it's just bizarre that you know, you had this setup and then she never returned. But I liked, you know, they get there on the moon. And things were a bit, you know, odd, and the gravity and all of that. And then they start to investigate things, and you know, you've got cobwebs everywhere. And then that brilliant CG.
That's where it all falls down.
Really?
Why'd you have cobwebs on the moon?
Don't
think spiders spin cobwebs. I just don't get it at all. It's almost like, it's like one of these stories where it's been written to deliberately piss me off. I think that's the only way I can describe it. It's like, how can we really piss off an age-old Doctor Who fan now? You know, oh no, let's do this, let's do that. Let's turn the moon into a flipping space chicken. You know, let's have unicellular life forms out. And I must admit, the spiders look absolutely brilliant. They really look good. There's no two ways about it. The kind of creeping terror, the skittery sounds as they realise there's something in here with them. And the reveals, really good. They reminded me of, you know, those big bastards in Starship Troopers.
Yes, yeah.
I love Starship Troopers. Now, that is a whole pile of nonsense. And the science is all over the place, but I don't care. You know, because it doesn't make the science part of the story, whereas Kill the Moon does. It goes out to mention, you know, this. It goes out to mention gravity. There's something wrong with gravity. Okay, what's wrong? Well, the moon's increasing its mass. Okay, fine. And that would cause disruption on planet Earth, because obviously there's a gravitic relationship between the two planetary bodies, blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff. But then we get this really bizarre thing where Courtney ends up flying because there's a sudden, I don't know, it only seems to happen in the room, right, where she's in, and she ends up floating up to the ceiling when the spiders attack. And everyone on the other side of the door doesn't. Their feet are firmly on the ground, but Courtney's lost weight. She's in a weightless environment, and it's, I don't get it. I just, there's so much stuff. So that to me, because there cannot be any explanation for that other than the fact that it was written that way to have a little bit of tension, a little bit of extra drama or terror or something. And that to me is something that is contrived to be that way, right? So that's not a natural part of the story or the setup. That's something the writer has hammered in to make a certain thing happen just to evoke a response from the audience. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yes, quite probably. And it's the sort of thing where if you had, longer, it could have been established earlier. You know, there could have been.
Yeah, I mean, you could just have a little bit of artificial gravity in the mining base, for example. You know, it just, you know, they've got some kind of malfunctioning artificial gravity, because the gravity in the moon is up and down, you know, too infrequently. That has a dangerous effect on people's biology, because our bodies can't adjust to that kind of push and pull, you know, they're too frequently. So it would make perfect sense for the miners to have some kind of artificial gravity, something, and that's the thing that isn't working in the room, you know. And you don't even need to explain it in great depth, you know, you can just be there. And it's so, there is, it does seem to me like, I'm tempted to call it a certain laziness, but I know Peter Harness is a really good writer. You know, he's written some good stuff. I know he did War of the Worlds, which I didn't like that either. I'm a huge fan of War of the Worlds, but the adaptation was fucking awful. But anyway, excuse my French.
Yeah, I suppose,
Wallander was brilliant. Loved Wallander. I know he wrote that. And I know he's won a whole bunch of awards, you know, and BAFTAs and various things. And what's that thing? There was something, I'm trying to look on something. He did something with Jason Isaacs in it as well. I can't remember what that was. It was some sort of adaptation of something, I think. But that was really good as well. And I think with that sort of stuff, it's brilliant. But when it comes to science fiction, and I know he's a science fiction fan, I know he reads science fiction, but it just, to me, if I didn't know that, I would think that this was written by somebody who doesn't actually understand sci-fi or fantasy at all, you know, or is trying to do something with it, but in a really amateur way, because you cannot fool a science fiction audience, right? You know, we generally, right, we're lovely people, right? But if you try to, you cannot fool everybody all of the time. You cannot pull cheap stunts. I think that's what I'm kind of getting at. We've seen it all before. You know, we're not living in the 1930s at the start of all this stuff. You know, we're not even in the 1950s, the golden age of sci-fi. You know, we're much more, I would say, we're more advanced. I was going to say we're too clever for it, but that's not true at all. I'm as dumb as you like, but you know, usually science fiction is read by quite intelligent people. You know, not me really. Obviously, you know, I'm as dumb as they come. But you know, it's people who like their stories to be challenging, to make them think. You know, to think about it, not just the science, but the implications of things, or some kind of speculative, you know, big, massive, bold concept that we've never read before, or something that throws a part of the human condition into a different light, because it can't do it in mainstream contemporary fiction. It needs that element of the extraordinary to really push it to go where it needs to go. And actually, that part of it possibly is maybe what he's trying to do with the whole Clara decision making thing. But again, that I think is so clunky, horrible and embarrassing to watch, that if that is what the whole story is about, then at that point, and you take all the science and all the other bits away from it, it falls apart. The opening 5 minutes or so, or the opening pre-credit sequence where Clara's addressing, you know, we've only got, what, 45 minutes and the whole planet Earth has to decide what it's going to do. Oh, I mean, how many times have we seen something like that? Again, it's a cheap opener. It's like a cheap way to suddenly get everybody watching. But we've seen it done before, and it's, you know, I don't know if Mr. Harness was kind of writing this thinking, oh no, this is a great idea, we've never seen this before. I'm sure he didn't, you know, that's me being flippant, and I do apologise, but it's, you know, you can be more than it, you can be more intelligent than that. One thing I do like, I'm just going to throw this in, is, you know, one thing I do like about Series 8 and 9 of Doctor Who is that clearly they were trying to really push the envelope and the sort of stories that they could tell in Doctor Who. You can see it. You know, these are some of the most adventurous, most challenging stories that we've ever seen in the series since it began. And some of them work brilliantly and some of them tend to kind of fail. And this is why I think, you know, you get that. You know, you get polar disputes when it comes to these stories. You know, people either really love them or they tend to really dislike them. And there's very little in the middle ground, but I think that's intentional. You know, those stories are always going to drive that kind of thing because, you know, they're trying to do something different. And I think for me, I think they probably fail more than they succeed. And this particular story for me is a real prime example of that failure, because I don't think enough care and attention has been spent on the actual story. I think it's contrived. I think there are elements that are lazy, that could have worked out better, that display a lack of knowledge with general sort of sci-fi, or seem to imply a lack of knowledge in sci-fi tropes and what we've seen before and what you can kind of do. And it just sucks for me from beginning to end, I'm afraid. Oh, man, I feel horrible saying that.
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes to, you know, the planet must vote and stuff.
I mean, ugh!
See, you know, I watched it
again,
and I was like,
horrible!
Yeah, it doesn't sort of properly work, because half the planet is...
Trite, it's... Ugh.
Yeah. And I understand that, but I'm more invested in Clara at that point.
Okay, so, all right, let's look at this and let's analyse Clara in this, right? So she's kind of a doctor in training at this point, isn't she? Or whether willingly or not.
But also, I will just add before we get into that, you know, the show, you know, I think everyone working on it, I mean, they all try their absolute, you know, best, and they want to deliver, but it is a show unlike any other, I think, for many, many reasons. But it has an audience of people like us who are, you know, in their 40s, and have been watching it for a long time. It has people who are, you know, like Freya, who, you know, in their teens, and it has people who are younger than that, you know, and not a lot of shows, you know, have that massively broad appeal. And so, you know, they're trying to write something that will appeal to all of these people, and sometimes it just isn't going to work.
I think actually maybe with this season, and certainly this story, I wonder if they actually were trying for that. I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out really what they thought the audience was for these stories.
Yeah, I really like series 8 and 9. I like you said, I think they're some of the most boldest and,
yeah, I would agree with that part.
Daring stuff they did. And I really felt there was a huge number of just excellent episodes in this lot. But it was dark and it was becoming, complex. And I think it was kind of obvious why, some people switched off, at this point. And so, yeah, were they going for, hardcore Who fans at this point? Did they just kind of, we no longer care in that, they delivered Smith and it was a, big hit and, they did a certain thing with that and now they wanted to try something different, which, you can understand, because if you're just going to churn out the same stuff repeatedly, it gets boring and, that creativity dries, So, yes, it's funny, it's some of the sort of... not everyone's a huge fan of a lot of this stuff in 8 and 9, but I think it's brilliant, so it's weird, it's it's not appealing to not trying to necessarily appeal to such a wide audience, and when I say that I don't specifically mean with this episode, but that might be why, a lot of people just, it's a bit funny that this is an episode that gets so often brought up for its kind of bullshit science, and it doesn't happen on any other episode.
I know, but then the science isn't such a big thing on any other episode.
And I suppose that's why. And also, the things you're saying are all justifiable, and I can see, to be fair,
Jeff, I've always thought this as well. Again, going back to when I first watched this story, I first saw this story, and I kind of self-analyzed my emotional response to it. I thought, do you know what? I thought if it wasn't the Earth's moon, if it was the planet Peladon or some other planet, some just made-up fantasy planet that has its own kind of logic, its own mythology, its own legend of a thing, an unexplicable event that turns out to be a space dragon emerging from its moon, I could take that, I would happily take that. And you could tell exactly the same story, really, right? Because you can introduce magical things. I think the big problem is the fact we're dealing with something that we know. And, okay, you could argue, possibly, because this may have been the intention, that we can't always trust the things that we know, or that the things we think we know are wrong, and that no matter what our observed science tells us about a certain thing, i.e. the moon, it can still be wrong. And I can, I can sort of accept that as well. I could accept it if the story does something with it. Now, again, does the story do something with it? I don't know. I don't know really what the story is in here, to be fair. This is the big problem I really have. Like I said, if you sweep all that science stuff off the desk, what is the story? What are they telling? Is it in a purely physical sense, right? Which is that here's an event, here's a potential catastrophe in waiting, and the people of Earth have to come together to make a decision, and Clara's the one who's going to make that happen, not the Doctor, Clara. In which case, what does the Doctor actually do in this episode, apart from run around being smug and a little bit acerbic on occasion, right? Okay. Maybe that's what it is. Or is it something a bit more kind of metaphysical? Is it a commentary on the fact that humanity, when it has to decide something as a whole, is actually nothing more than a bunch of nasty shitheads? That we would quite happily, as a race, vote to kill something we don't understand, rather than take the chance that it might be something extraordinary and beautiful and awaken something in us that actually guarantees our future. Is it even deeper than that? Is it a kind of commentary on the future of the past Doctor Who, right? So the Doctor Who of the past has this kind of future history, which we've seen in the Pertwee stories, for example, like Colony in Space and the Mutants, and even the first series one of the new series, the Christopher Eccleston series, where we have the future bountiful human empire and all that sort of stuff, and in the big finishes and the novels and all that sort of thing, we got this humanity, this spreading out and doing things and what they do, and is this to say, is this a thing that says all of that is dependent upon this one act here? I think there's probably part of that, but I could even take that, but the moon reappears. Oh, I don't, don't get it. It's like every time I think, okay, I've understood it, they throw something else in which makes no credible sense on any level. I can't look at it on a purely story-based level because I don't think the story is very clear. And what I can, the fragments of it that I can pull together, don't seem to hang together with any sort of coherence. So I don't get it. And if I try and look deeper under the narrative for, I don't know, some kind of theme or something, or some sort of comment, or, you know, all that stuff I've just been talking about, again, it just vanishes. There's nothing really solid there. You know, there's maybe a few things that are hinted at, but are they intentional or are they purely accidental? I don't know. I don't get it. It's not a very satisfying episode. It just doesn't come together in any way that I can find myself rooting for.
And yeah, I will say that perhaps it was due to the tweets that we got, which we'll come to in a bit, but I did sort of go into this, you know, one part of me thinking, you know, I do like this one, I've enjoyed this, and another part of me thinking, am I wrong about it? And
no, you're not wrong, mate, because you enjoy what you enjoy.
Well,
and
yes,
you
that's true, but there are parts of it, you know, where, like I was saying, you know, Courtney and, you know, half the planet can't vote because Clara can't see them and stuff like that.
Well, again, right, so, I mean, that's what they got. They got like an hour or something, right, to make the decision. They set the timer off, and it's, I don't know, 45 minutes or whatever it is, just less than an hour. And within that time, how far does the Earth travel in an hour? How far does it sweep across? Not, it can't be that much, right? It's only an hour's difference between London and France. So essentially you've got probably Europe. Okay, you're further away, so you can probably see a good half of the hemisphere, right?
Yeah. So, but, you know, what I was going to say is I think that just Clark Jenner is superb in this.
Hold on, you like something.
I think she's always brilliant, and she's working really well, really hard with something that is perhaps, you know, not quite brilliant. And I,
to be fair, I think they all are in this. I think, yeah, Jenna Coleman, this is a good episode for her to show her acting chops.
Well, that's it, and I'm a big Clara fan, and you know, this does a lot for her, and also with her relationship with the Doctor. You know, when they have the argument, you know, and the TARDIS at the end, and you know, if this was a show that was a 15 rating, you know, she'd have been swearing it, you know,
she would,
and you know, it does a lot to sort of reinforce him being, you know, sort of seemingly unreliable, not unreliable at the time, but prone to just sort of wandering off and leaving people to it. And even though he's got the faith and the confidence in them, it's not, you know, it's not clear, you know, but because he's just leaving. And like you said, I'm trying to take the training wheels off, and you know, she didn't. What an awful
and bloody
situation.
She sees that as quite patronising.
Yeah, she does, yeah. So, yes, I think Jenna is you know, brilliant in this one. And something that did sort of, it did bug me that in the trailers after this, you know, it really was played that she'd left. You know, and she was,
and then you see her in the trailer for the next episode
in Mummy on the Orient Express, which you kind of thought, oh, that's kind of a bit annoying, and they briefly address it, but then you get a brilliant episode in Mummy on the Orient Express, so I can kind of let it go.
Yeah,
but
we need to talk about that one, mate, as well.
But you know, if we had 22 episodes in a series, you know, stuff like this would play out a bit longer, you know, but we don't, so it's, you know.
Yeah, do you know, I was waiting for a conversation in this one, which actually I think happens in the Mummy story, because there's a point where in that story she understands why the Doctor did leave her to make that decision, isn't it? She sort of, because if I remember, a lot of the Mummy story, she's kind of working through it in her head and deciding whether or not she can actually stay with the Doctor.
That's it, yeah.
And then eventually comes to understand that the reason he did what he did is because this is what he does all the time. He makes these decisions, you know, and it's hard. You know, he wants her to understand that these are not frivolous, easy things to decide. You know, you are deciding the whole thing. And she feels it in that moment, you know, in the Kill the Moon thing. She feels the weight of that decision, and it almost breaks her. And it does to some degree. You know, she's changed at the end of it. Their relationship has changed when she comes out the side of it. And her reaction to dress the Doctor down the way she does in the TARDIS is really believable. You know, I can accept that. Now, the problem I have with that bit, I guess, to, you know, just put my negative sourness on it, is that I just don't enjoy watching that in a Doctor Who episode. You know, it reminded me very much of the point where, because the Doctor doesn't come out smelling roses in that thing. You know, he tries to, it's not even trying to make, well, he does try to make light of it to a degree, because that's what the Doctor does. You know, the face down confrontation or face down difficult moments with a bit of a joke, a bit of flippancy. But it doesn't work here. You know, Clara's not letting him get away with that at all, quite rightly, you know, because you kind of feel for her. But the Doctor doesn't come out as a particularly noble, heroic, or generous kind of character. And for me, this is the reason I dislike it, is for the same sort of reason I dislike the Twin Dilemma, episode one, where the Doctor tries to strangle Perry. It's just uncomfortable to watch. You know, it doesn't feel like I'm watching Doctor Who at this point. And I appreciate them pushing the show into this direction and trying it to see what will happen. But I don't enjoy it, you know. That doesn't mean to say I'm going to tune out. Obviously, I'll always come back next week if there's a creepy mummy around. But
yeah, they're pushing the character and doing different things, you know. And I didn't like that he abandoned her, but I don't think you're meant to, you know. You know, there's a bigger reason behind it.
But the problem is it doesn't make us warm to the character. And I think this is also a thing that affected the Sixth Doctor, because the Sixth Doctor, they again try to write in this journey from him being quite dark and chaotic and irresponsible and violent. And the whole plan was to kind of smooth that out, for him to learn about himself along the way. But it just, it just didn't work within the format. And they try it again later on with Doctor 12. And again, it divides opinion, you know. Some people love it, some people don't, and
it does work, because like I said earlier,
I think it does. Because it's more considered here, and they do actually get to write that journey. I think, you know, it does come through the other side of it.
Yeah, Clara's journey in this is really good, even if upon viewing it again I can see some of the complaints and I can see, you know, your dislikes with it, but I suppose for me the things I enjoy have outweighed that. You know, the spiders, the sort of tension and the fear of it. 12's banging theme comes in when he runs off at one point. Production design is really good. You know, they look like they're on the moon, even though it's Lanzarote.
Even though the shadows are all pointing in the wrong direction.
Well, it's only fake anyway up there, isn't it?
Nobody lands on the moon anyway. The trouble is, right, once you start... I know, I've seen this with a lot of other fans as well, and I'm ashamed to admit to this myself. Maybe it's just a human thing, much more than anything else. But once you dislike something to this extent, you end up picking all kinds of holes in it.
Given that Doctor Who,
as I said, has a very frivolous relationship with real science, right? Tends to steer away from it wherever possible, I think, and that's probably wise. But and it's also got a history of having shaky sets, and its viewers having to suspend their disbelief. You can see the strings on some of the wonky spaceships of the past and all that sort of stuff. And yet, you know, even the web planet, you can see the Kirby wires, you know, glinting off the black velvet background that they're shot against. You can see the smears of Vaseline trying to on the camera lens, just because they're trying to create an alien atmosphere. You take all of that stuff. But when there's an episode that you really, really dislike, and it's something like an airlock that is actually not an airlock, it's just a door, right? Then it's got airlock painted on the side of it. If that was The Nightmare of Eden, I wouldn't care. It's whatever, I'll just ignore that, right? But somehow it's in the story that I dislike, so now it's mega offensive. It's really offensive. And then they walk out onto the moon, right? And then and I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, no, because the sunlight on the earth it shows the sun shining from a certain direction. You can see it, right? And yet the shadows would place the sun in a different place entirely, the opposite way around to where it actually seems to be shining. So again, that's rubbish as well. And it's like, all this stuff is rubbish now. It's an amniotic fluid inside the moon. Well, where does that come from? And then you start thinking, well, the moon's increasing mass because of gravity. Isn't it? Well, no, if it's actually an egg, then it would decrease in mass, because that's what eggs do. They lose about 30-40% of their mass as they develop inside the eggshell. So it would actually be losing, the gravity would be getting less and less and less, so they'd be flying into space more likely rather than actually coming down onto it. And what's all this about tectonic plates? The moon doesn't have tectonic plates. It's dead from that respect. And even if it was an egg, then would that really cause tectonic disruption to that extent? And blah, 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 blah. You start losing your shit big time.
I think, dear listeners, it's clear that Paul didn't and doesn't like this episode.
Do you know what, right? It's interesting. Just going back to what you were saying a little while ago about Series 8 and Series 9. Because, as you know, as you may or may not know, my young daughter Freya, who joins us on occasion, so she started watching with Series 10, which I think I've said before. And once she'd finished watching Series 10, whilst waiting for Series 11 to start, we went back to Series 1 and watched them all, you know. And when it came to these stories, Series 8 and 9, I asked her if, because she went into Series 8, you know, thinking, yay, 12th Doctor, this is kind of where I started, expecting the character that she saw in Series 10, very, very different. And it was quite clear that by this point, she was kind of losing interest big time in the whole thing. So I said to her, look, if you'd have started watching with me here, would you still be a Doctor Who fan? And she said, no. She said, I really don't like these stories at all.
You know, I've spoken to a few people, you know, over the years, and my wife's half-brother, he was 14, maybe, yeah, when this all started, Capaldi, and he switched off. Too old, too dark, he didn't like
it.
Yeah,
that's a shame, really.
You know, it is a shame, because he missed out on some of stuff, but, you know, he's younger, he didn't like it, you know, he was used to a certain thing, and... You know, rightly or wrongly, you know, that was the you know, where he did what he, you know, was right for him, you know. And another friend, you know, she stopped watching it, even though she was a huge fan, and then picked up again with Jodie, you know. So it's not saying it's bad at all. It's not. Like I just said, I think, you know, certainly 8 and 9 are excellent, and Series 10 has got some absolutely cracking stuff in it as well.
That's my favourite. I have to say, Series 10 out of the Capaldi years is my favourite.
Thin Ice and Knock Knock and you know, Oxygen and Extremis and stuff, and obviously the finale, brilliant. I was less keen on the Pyramid stuff.
I love that.
Need to rewatch. Yeah. But you know, not everything is for everyone.
It's
bad.
Yeah.
You know? So in retrospect, looking back at this episode, for me, you know, a lot of really good stuff. You know, the spiders, the production design, the sort of tension and fear, the kind of moral and dramatic stuff for Clara, even if, you know, perhaps it could have, the end goal of this one perhaps could have been, you know, achieved in a different way, which could have been overall stronger. So this is an episode that, you know, I probably wouldn't go back to pick out and watch again, but if I was going to do a whole series rewatch, I would watch it, and I would like the core, you know, surface stuff of it, you know, rather than, you know, the spiders and, you know, running away from them and all of that, you know, and what Clara ends up doing with the Doctor, even if bits of it don't quite work for me now, in a way that they perhaps did, or were not as thought about, you know, when I first watched it. So.
Now I feel bad, because there's a story that you enjoyed and now you don't enjoy it the same way anymore.
You bastards have taken it from me.
I know, I'm so sorry, man. I feel awful now, look.
Well, I'm now going to read out some tweets. So.
Oh, dear. Well, there are some positive tweets, if I remember from when I looked on them an hour ago. So
in fact, these two tweets here, the first two I've got up, probably kind of sum this up, you know, the whole thing really well. So Kendrick, who at DDP Kendrick, he's back online. Nice to have him around again.
Yay.
I very, very, very much do not enjoy this episode. From the questionable messaging to annoying cast to out-of-character moments to lack of plot to bad plot twists to just overall being unenjoyable to watch, this is a low point of Doctor Who for me. So, Kendrick, I'm taking from that that you didn't like this one very much.
It's a high possibility.
Yeah. And then the next tweet I hear from Matthew, who is at Disciple of Brad. I'm a big Series 8 defender and will support Kill the Moon till the heat to the hilt. Entertaining story, yeah, exploring the relationship between 12 and Clara, which has a direct payoff in TFOTN, and I find it wonderfully absurd that the moon is an egg. No other show would even think of doing that.
Good point. Yes, yes, indeed. I just wish it had been somebody else's moon / egg.
Yeah, yeah, I can see where. Yeah, I can understand your.
I mean, that's probably completely irrational of me, though, in a way, isn't it? You know, why can I accept a completely fictional moon being a completely fictional egg, but not the actual moon, which I've never been to, and which all the recordings that I have seen of people landing on could even be fake anyway. You know, the only thing I know about the moon is what I read on the internet or in books or seen on TV, and all of that could be complete nonsense. And yet, I have such real trouble accepting the possibility that what I think of as the moon, regardless of it being an egg or anything, is not what I think it is, not what I've been led to. Well, not what I've been educated. I mean, that in itself is quite an interesting conundrum. I just wish the story had done something with that, rather than going down this kind of po-faced route of, I don't know what the hell it was trying to do. I think that's, anyway, enough said. We've been there, we've done it.
So there's another tweet from the TARDIS crew, which is another Doctor Who podcast, at Crew TARDIS. Kill the Moon is one of the highlights of Series 8.
Oh, well done.
This I quite like this one. This is from Sai, who is at Bromley 001. That's a new name to us, so hello, Sai.
He says, hey, Sai.
Really don't like Sleep No More. Possibly the worst, to my mind at least, of the whole of Capaldi's run. Just didn't do anything for me at all. My mum's not watched Doctor Who since the days of Tennant, and that particular night I had to watch at my parents' because I'd had a panic attack across at my own flat. Not the greatest episode to try and resell the show to her.
No. That's Sleep No More, was it? Not this one. Interesting. Yeah, we didn't do that one, did we?
And then James H, who's at FitGeek_UK. So in our post about this, we refer to them as two classics. And he said, you will excuse me, please, as I have to find a dictionary, as I am unfamiliar with the use of the word classic.
I saw that one. I was fine.
The Robot of Death, who's at Graham Ward 68, said, personally, I think Kill the Moon has a conceptually daft end, but the rest is actually dramatic and atmospheric. Yes, Robot of Death.
It does have
Sleep No More is a solid base under siege, also with a conceptually daft monster, but one that has scary abilities and a bit more humour. I enjoy both, except the last 5 minutes of one. And then I chatted a bit about it, and he said, I think they both push credibility, but the show's central concept does in every episode.
That's what he's saying about the flying police box and everything else, isn't it? Yeah, which is true, but
he said he liked Jenna and Peter together. And then let me see, Dexter Matheson, who's 12_doctor_lover, said Sleep No More is the most boring episode in the revival, whereas I think Kill the Moon is pretty good. And then Octorock said they voted for Sleep No More. I dislike both, but at least Sleep No More isn't actively irritating.
Oh, yeah.
Maddie Jones, who is at Maddie_Jones15, said, I watched Sleep No More a few times recently. It was a lot better than I remembered. It suffers badly from its placement in the season just before Clara's exit. And that's a good point, because
where does it come? I can't remember now.
We've had the Zygon episode, then we go to this, and then it's Face
the Raven straight after.
So her last, you know, televised. I'd got the running order wrong because I commented and said the last televised adventure is she's not herself in it because she's Bonnie. But this actually comes after the Zygon one. So
I see.
We go Sleep No More, which is a real downer of an episode, and then Face the Raven, in which she dies. So it's a shame that her last sort of three episodes are you know, Clara being in a Zygon coma.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then this episode, which a lot of people, Sleep No More, which a lot of people didn't like, and then she dies, although, of course, she comes back. So, a couple more tweets
Face
here.
Raven. Face
yeah,
Raven.
Yeah, I do
story.
Too, yeah. So, Harvey, who's at HarveyWho03, Sleep No More is just enjoyable, but Kill the Moon is so clever and thematically brilliant.
Really?
God,
I must have missed that.
Fraser Gregory, at Felix Fraser, Kill the Moon is surprisingly good if you ignore the moon and focus on the story it's telling instead, which is sort of what I'm saying, you know, about about the characters.
I struggle to get a grip on what the story is. I think that's
yeah,
a big
I think it's more about
me,
the character stuff in it, really. Fraser
again,
says Sleep No More had the opposite effect on me that its title suggests. Dave,
not a fan of that one either, though.
Hemavorus Russ says, Kill the Moon, despite what you think of the moon thing, is a good story with lots to love about it. Sleep No More tried to do something different with found footage idea, but it's only partially successful. And I think, yeah, that's all the tweets. So yeah, it's quite a mixed bag. I think people either, you know, they like it.
It is a proper Marmite story, isn't it? You either
really
love it or you hate
yeah.
it, I think. I don't think there's middle ground.
No, there doesn't seem to be. So my conclusion would be that, it's a Marmite. People either like it and can see past any, you know, deficiencies it might have, or they don't like it at all.
Yeah,
can't see past
those
deficiencies.
And I think what's important, though, is, you know, we're still coming at this from our different corners, but, you know, there's no disrespect of each other's opinion. You know, I mean, I disrespect you anyway, Jeff, because
well,
you
do,
know,
yeah.
Just who I am. But,
you know, it's just the way
you know,
it goes.
That hasn't that hasn't increased just because you enjoy a story that I don't.
You know, we're not flinging insults and stuff, and you know, you don't like it, and I respect that, and you know, you're not giving me grief for liking it, which is, you know, what happens a lot online. Oh, you know, I like this, but you're wrong for liking that.
Yeah,
and,
we do see
know,
that a lot, sadly.
Yeah, and which is really sad, really, because. You know, at the end of the day, it's about what you enjoy, and even if that thing isn't a perfect piece of art or, you know, entertainment,
yeah.
If it's made
because sometimes
happy,
these things mean something to you on a personal level, don't they? And that's something that is you can't share because it is unique. It's a unique resonance that you have with this particular story or an element of the story or something. And regardless of what somebody may see as its critical flaws or, you know, plot holes or bad science or whatever and that stuff, it's like, do you know what? The end of the day, that doesn't matter.
It doesn't
somebody
matter
enjoys
if it's
you know, celebrate the fact they enjoy
yeah.
it. And,
if it's you know, moved it's, you to be...
it's not something to weaponize against somebody.
No. If you've been scared by it or it's made you happy or, you know, it's like I've seen people say, you know, they didn't like the Ghost Monument episode and, you know... That episode has, for me, you know, one of the absolute happiest Who moments.
Yeah,
pure
I
joy,
love that episode.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, I liked the whole episode, and then that smashed it out of the park for me. And if people didn't like it, that's, you know, that's fine, but I won't have that taken away from me. You
no,
know,
you're quite
because
right.
It's
strange. Actually, Freya didn't like Ghost Monument too
didn't
much
she?
Either, actually.
Like,
well, the first time she saw it, I think
tomorrow.
second time she watched it, I think she enjoyed it a bit more, but it's never been a strong favourite of hers at all.
It's fair enough, you know, it just don't work for everyone.
Exactly.
You know? But I must admit to re-watching that last scene with the TARDIS arriving a number of times over the next week after watching that episode. You know,
yeah.
But I've re-watched that episode a number of times since as well. It's brilliant. Anyway... thank you very much, dear listeners, for joining us and for people who've tweeted
thank
in.
You.
Thank you. We appreciate that, and we hope you've enjoyed the first corner-to-corner face-off over an episode with differing views.
Yeah.
We talked about Dalek. We didn't... We
No, we both unequivocally liked it, didn't we, pretty much, and... That's what we usually like most of the time, yeah. But this is a
so we'll have to do another one of these controversial episode reviews at some point.
Yeah, it's always good to have another look at them because you know it could be sometimes the reason you don't like actually something is because you're just having a bad day. You don't respond
to
something particularly
or
well.
You get swayed by other views and stuff, and maybe you know time is a.
Oh, that rarely does me, to be honest. I rarely get swayed by other views.
But I think, you know, it is good to reassess sometimes and doing with an episode of the show is easier than with a film, because a film is a lot longer.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's a lot longer. God, yeah, if I have to watch Avatar again, crikey.
Yeah.
I could.
Disgusting.
On that note, maybe we should end this.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you very much. We will catch you on the next episode.
Till next time, bye for now.